For May the 30th, 2025, we talk about Parasocial, Pacific Drive, Subject, and much more. Welcome to Level 545. My name is Kay Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Hey there, Ben. Welcome back.
Hey. Yeah. Sorry for my unexplained and explained absence the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's fine. You were on the other side of the ding-dang continent.
Yeah. I was in Canada last week.
To be fair, that's normal.
I mean, from where he usually is.
Oh, yeah. I was on the same side of the continent, I guess, last week. I had a wedding in Newfoundland that my partner's friend from college was having. So, yeah, we took a trip out there for a while. That was nice. A lot of traveling because there are not direct ways to fly out there. So
I imagine, yeah. Probably had to, stop in, Boston.
Yeah, close. We went through Halifax, but then we had to take a bus to get to Vancouver to be able to fly there in the first place.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm imagining you on a canoe at some point.
Yeah, thereabouts. Huh.
Video games have taught me that the Pacific Northwest is nothing but anomaly field. So I assume that's why it's hard to get around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Newfoundland seems cool to me. I've got a soft spot for basically anything northeast like that.
It's where they filmed The Lighthouse. There were a couple of moments where you can see why it's not a big leap to put a black and white filter on that and have it turn out the way it did. So
I feel like come here and see where they filmed The Lighthouse would not be my pitch for trying to get people to come.
Yeah, they got other stuff. They got some moose and national parks and stuff. So yeah. I think that's the sugar that brings people there.
I kind of always have it in my back pocket. I've never been up there, but it's things go sideways here. I could probably live up in Nova Scotia. That would probably be fine. Go to Halifax or something.
The island that we were on that was off of Newfoundland, they were talking about during the quarantine, they just stopped ferries there. And they're
wow.
We didn't have any cases for a couple of years because we didn't have any new people come here.
Nothing came in. Nothing went out.
It felt like a preview for 28 years later coming out later this month. So, or next month.
I feel like that's the real tourism pitch you do nowadays. Just, Canada, we don't have Trump.
Well, you know.
Yeah. Definitely was feeling that coming back into the United States. Where it's
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you had a good time.
Yeah.
And anything else going on?
Oh, nothing too crazy. I'm going into the office tomorrow, and there will be kids from high school there, asking people about their jobs.
Oh, and, wow.
Life advice. So I'm excited to either poison or give them good advice. We'll see.
Fucking run. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Nice. I had a pretty fine weekend. On Friday, Gwen and I recorded about I Saw the TV Glow. We did an extra episode.
Nice.
Yeah, we did an extra episode of Unfilmable about it with me and her because it made more sense than doing it with Gary. So that was a good time talking about that movie. I greatly enjoy and thinking back to when I came on here, still in the closet. And I think my review of it was, it's very effective at what it is trying to get across.
that was a weird movie for me, because it had no impact on me, just nothing. And then like a week or two later, just out of nowhere thought about it and like started crying.
Oh yeah. No, it's just me. It, like I'm like one of four people in the theater down at the theater off of OSU. Just, whoa, oh my God, what? Just bawling. yeah. And then on Saturday, more movie stuff. I went down to Columbus with my brother and saw Friendship.
Hell yeah.
What's yeah. that? I haven't heard of that one.
That is a new comedy question mark. It's very funny. It's incredibly funny, but there's more going on with it. It is
$100 a lick. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Toad. Or thank you, Toad Boy. I was inconsolable, Ben.
Like, I don't know how you describe the plot of that movie to someone and like have it make sense.
Like the way that I see it is it's like take a person from an I Think You Should Leave sketch and like extend out what their actual life would be like and how specifically they would be unable to like completely unequipped to deal with anything, really.
The hard cut to the scene of them with the dog in the sewers is all I'll say. Yeah. So good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really good. It's Tim Robinson and Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd.
Yeah. And when you get Tim Robinson, you know, you got a Connor O'Malley in there. yeah. Go see it. I am not going to ruin anything more about it, but it is an unqualified recommendation. There's a not inconsiderable amount of it's like Cable Guy meets Punch Drunk Love, except without the romance subplot.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
It's Wait, a very the Cable movie. Guy was in a romance?
No, the Carrey movie, Jim Carrey and Matthew Broderick movie from the 90s.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. No, I get what you mean now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what I got. Dennis, how about
Very
you?
Cool. Yeah. I'm on a little adventure with my Steam Deck right now.
Okay.
Cause I thought I had killed it, but maybe I haven't.
Oh, it was a trigger, right?
Well, no, that's the least of my worries.
oh boy.
You have an established special relationship with mobile consoles.
Yes. yeah. So I thought the battery had died on me, and as long as it was plugged in, I could play it. Everything seemed fine. But when it would show 100% and I unplugged it, first over like the span of 10 minutes, it would completely drain to the point of shutting down. And then that got down to a minute, and then that got down to 10 seconds, and then I just couldn't unplug it.
Oh.
And I was like, shit. Like, I wish I could say I know the exact time I dropped it that maybe was causing this.
Okay.
The truth is that thing gets dropped with enough frequency that it's like, yes, I could see something like this happening.
Huh.
However, I looked into it, and apparently, if you charge it with a... I think it's like an OEM USB-C cable or something like that. I don't know what the acronym stands for, but a certain type of USB-C cable, it can miscalibrate the battery to where it's actually fine, but whatever, you know, program is sensing where it's at.
So you're using like
gets confused.
You were just using like an aftermarket, like just regular, not regular, but like you weren't using the USB-C cable that came with it.
No. Well, and like, this is supposed to be the future, right? That now that iPhones are USB-C and all the, you know, most computers are USB-C, they're just lying around the house. I just slam it into whatever one's closest when I see that the battery is low, and that's super convenient.
What does the U in USB mean?
Universal, right?
So yeah. It means you better keep that cable around.
I'm learning. Actually, the original one, kind of varies. It's either at my nightstand or it is in my backpack. So like I know where the original one was. I just didn't think it was going to be a problem until it was. So there's a very elaborate solution for this that I found that I'm trying right now where you have to boot it. So first off, you got to turn it all the way off. Then you boot it into like its OS menu mode or something. You like hold the volume plus button at the same time as hitting the power button. And that just brings it up to like the, you know, the F1 boot menu equivalent on the Steam Deck.
Oh, yeah.
And then you leave it there.
Okay.
And you let the battery truly all the way drain. Because what happens is, I guess, you know, whatever's built in senses, thinks that the battery is almost gone. And so it shuts down to protect itself.
Mm-hmm.
Or try to do you a favor or something.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I all day today, I've just left it open on that boot menu.
Mm-hmm.
And encouragingly, the battery lasts just fine when that's on. So it was several hours before it petered out on me.
Okay.
Apparently, and there's so a command
Go ahead.
Apparently, there's a command to recalibrate the batteries.
Yes, something like that. But basically what I read is like to get it recalibrated, you need to make sure you're actually starting from zero.
Right.
Then charge up. So like you take it to zero and then you plug it in just long enough to turn it back on and then leave it again to die. Cause it's like really tamping the battery down to zero.
Mm.
And then I'll charge it overnight, turn it on, recalibrate, and hopefully that will get me back.
Mm.
But yeah, that is, I've been doing CPR on this bad boy all day.
You really want to read to the end of those instructions to make sure that the last steps are not send $500 to Valve.
Oh shit. Hold on. Let me scroll down. Send $500. Yep.
There okay.
Damn.
Yeah. Hopefully so, that works. Hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this has been my Balatro machine. Before that, it was my Slay the Spire machine.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm hoping it will be my Monster Train 2 machine.
Mm-hmm.
Previews of coming attractions.
It plays real good on that, yeah.
That is contingent on this resuscitation working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we'll see.
Well, Godspeed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Moxie, how about you?
Yeah, so this has been actually kind of a crazy weekend. I went to the Capital House Music Festival, which was kind of part of kicking off Pride here. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. I have no idea what house music is, like what makes it different from regular dance music.
More oomphs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's like oomphs per minute.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I mean, people there were super insistent that this was, like, the place in D.C. for, quote, real house music.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what that means, but it was a lot of fun being with people that were super excited about what they were doing.
I have to tell you, I am just thinking, like, literally of a ton of people on ecstasy just wigging out on the House of Representatives floor.
I mean, I would definitely watch that.
Yeah, rolling in the rotunda, they call it.
Yeah, you cannot prove that's not what happened.
Yeah, if you listen to Madison Cawthorn, it's exactly what's happening. Mm. But why would you do that? So that's one for political junkies out there. Good party.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Just kind of hanging out, listening to music. No, it was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yesterday my church hosted the Gay Men's Choir, the DC Gay Men's Choir, which was really cool. I don't know, like, I vaguely know that, like, a cappella, like, clubs are a thing, but I've mm-hmm. never actually listened or, you know, gone to, like, a performance or anything like that. But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Did they do like religious music or?
No, it was just,
I mean,
just
hallelujah, whatever. It's raining men, right?
They definitely did that.
Okay.
That was actually their closing number.
Okay.
Nice.
But no, so, I mean, a combination of, I think the, you know, real progressive church, so, you know, supporting
the queer arts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just kind of supporting it. And then also they were one of the groups that got screwed over by Trump taking over the Kennedy Center.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. I knew that they were in the news for some reason.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't fully understand. Like, there's a, as I understand, like a greater DC gay men's chorus and then like subgroups or whatever. So I don't know that this particular group was directly infected, but, you know, still kind of a, you know, solidarity type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Acapella and House. So that was a fun mashup of a weekend.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So yeah, yeah, was a lot of fun. So yeah, things are kind of kicked off now. So now through like I think like first weekend in first or second weekend of June is, you know, back to back stuff here. So
cool.
I'm super excited.
Yeah. Our in Ohio our Pride stuff comes later. So but yeah, I'm going to try and hit Columbus. I've got that, Laura Jane Grace concert that I'm going to, which might as well be part of Pride. And then Mansfield Pride is like at the end of June or something like that. So yeah, just going to see, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do we feel about talking about video games?
Yeah, what I'm kind of ambivalent, but let's try.
Okay, let's give it a shot. To do that, we need to do the regular kind of show, What with the Grind, the Multiplayer, and the End Boss. And why don't we get started with...
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the last period of time or so. Ben, you've been away the longest, so I will go to you first.
Yeah, I got two. I think the first one I'm going to talk about is Expedition 33.
Okay.
I got credits to roll on it a bit ago and played a little bit of the post-game content, and I am more or less kind of done with it now. I was going to check in and get tabs on who's still playing the game and kind of where they're at. Dennis, are you still in? Or
yeah, early act two. Okay. My attention got stolen by Doom Dark Ages, but
got it.
It will be back.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I don't know. I have a hard time, I guess, like evaluating this game, because I think by the time I got to the credits of the game, I kind of realized like I just don't think I'm a JRPG person, and I don't think this game is for me. I definitely enjoyed being part of, like, I know we have a Slack channel for it. And so I enjoyed being a part of that and seeing what people had to say about it. And I enjoyed, like, on my own personal Discord server with some computer science friends, like, talking about it there. I definitely enjoyed that and, like, talking about different builds with people. But yeah, but I guess, like, yeah, a lot of it just doesn't hit me personally. And so it's like, I don't want to cast aspersions on the game or anything. I just want to put a huge asterisk on upfront saying that I don't think JRPGs are my thing. So, so for example, like the story, I won't spoil anything. I definitely respect the story. I think they did a good job of like creating really interesting twists throughout the arc of it. But just by the end of it, it just wasn't really emotionally effective to me, I guess. I thought what they did was interesting. But yeah, for me, it just kind of fell flat. But again, that's just, I think it's a personal thing. I was reflecting upon like Final Fantasy X, where it's like you fight your father in the last battle or whatever. And I think I had a similar feeling there where it's like, I don't care about this guy at all. I'm just going to keep playing the game, but like this isn't doing anything for me. It kind of feels similar here. Sort of some of the end game content. One of the things you can do is you have like character, like your friend missions you can do, similar to like Knights of the Old Republic. The difficulty level of those is kind of skewed towards like post credits though. Like you have to be somewhat high level to accomplish those. The level cap for your characters, I believe, is 99. I haven't hit it yet, but I think that's just from hearing about it in conversation. I think I'm somewhere in like the 80s maybe. And by the time you roll credits, you're probably somewhere like in the 60s, I would think.
Okay.
Just to give kind of a flag post for where everything is. And then the other thing that's interesting is you eventually get to level caps for your weapons, of whatever weapons you choose to level up. And the max level cap for those is 33 and on par with the game. So that's kind of nice. But you need a specific resource to get it from 32 to 33. And that's kind of gated at different post-game content that you have to like find and kind of really work towards getting.
Are these like challenge dungeons?
It's there's a variety of things. I won't be too specific with it, but it's a variety of different ways. So it could be some sort of dungeon in one corner, some sort of big boss battle somewhere else. Like, just kind of there's a dozen different ways to get this type of resource. So I basically ended my play of the game once I got one of those resources and leveled up one of my weapons, and then I was kind of like, I think I'm done.
Okay.
But so story aside, JRPG type stuff aside, I do think the mechanics of the game are really strong. And I think they did a good job of making a really stripped down game where there's not like all this bloated mechanics of like inventory explosions of like all these different things you need to manage or a bunch of different the systems are like siloed in lanes for each character with whatever their rule set is, a la Slay the Spire. And that's like a really good way to do it. It's not like bloated with like, here's like a, some sort of weird jelly item that you have that works really well with this character, not with anyone else or something. There's nothing like that. So that's good. And then it's more like a kind of like a CCG at a certain point where it's like, okay, how can I mix and match Pictos with weapon combinations for a character to make them have like the most busted combo possible? Kind of where I fell with it though is I basically kind of had a Charizard situation where I leveled up one character and got them extremely overpowered. And then I had like a secondary character that was pretty good. And then the third character was literally just there to revive or heal the other three characters, like in the turn-based battle. So I'm not sure if that's like the desired way to do it or, but I,
who was your overpowered character and why was it Mael?
It was not Mael.
What?
Yeah. Mael was my secondary.
Okay, say no more.
Myelma is my secondary one who is like not bad. You know, like, cause she has the one move that was like nerfed, right? But it's still like really good. So, but I will just say that my primary character was somebody else. And I'll say that the main mechanic that I used with them was shooting, where like you shoot, you can shoot the enemies with the free aim. And I basically invested all of my, like extra Pictos points or whatever, for lack of a better term, because I forget what it is, Luminous, I think, or whatever, into that character, so that because there's a bunch of tiny different Pictos that you can learn with respect to like shooting that all kind of couple together, where it's like a 1-5 chance for burning, 1-5 chance for marking them. Whenever you shoot a marked person, they get a stack of burning. Like whenever you do this, like you can very quickly pile all those on together so that you have a pretty effective like shooting combo essentially. And then that person, the weapon that I use for their primary weapon, gives them two base attacks. It gives them two attacks if their first attack's a base attack. They get like another round of whatever else. And so basically made it so that their base attack does like hits them like two or three times, two or three hits each time. It basically fills up your AP again, and you get like a second round for free.
And then you're spending all those points on free aim shots.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you just drain that down again.
I've been consistently impressed by how free aim seems so trivial because it is, you know, very low damage unless they have a critical point, which initially is the only thing you use it for. If you see a glowing weak spot, shoot it with free aim. Otherwise, you forget about it. And then the longer I go, the more I see free aim as like really valuable. It sounds like you found a way to bust it wide open.
But they
did a great job giving that kind of little ancillary attack a lot of utility.
Yeah, what I was happy about overall is that when I compared notes with like the three or four friends that I had playing it, like we all kind of had different paths for like what we were doing and like how effective that was. And so I didn't find anyone else who kind of did the exact same thing that I did. But I felt like a pretty good level of success with it for what I was doing. So So I was really happy with that experience, that there's kind of like a lot of different paths to get you there. It does kind of, I think once you're in super, super post credit, like late game, whatever, that's when you start being like, okay, what is like the million damage tier build? And what is like the billion level damage tier build? And then it gets like, that's when you can kind of differentiate between those, and it's like, okay, what will actually carry me and kill like literally anything in the game. And then there's some like differentiation there. And maybe that's when things kind of silo down to a certain point where it's like, well, you have to run this strategy to do that. But barring any of that, I was very impressed with the flexibility that you could use to kind of level people up. So even complaints that I might have of like, oh, it's kind of dumb that you just pour all your resources into one person instead of like fanning them out and like having synergies, that could just be a me problem because that's how I ran my build. And there could be more effective builds out there that of people doing that sort of thing, and I just don't know. So I was very happy with the game design in general here, and thought it was pretty pitch perfect.
I'm impressed to hear how much like variability there is even across different people's approaches. Because the idea of like, oh, every character kind of has their own distinct mechanic to it does make it feel like each of them has a distinct and prescribed lane.
Yeah, I will say with that, before I pour too much sugar on it, when you do look at like the map of all the different moves they can unlock, I will say that there's probably only like maybe 3 to 4 moves like out of like 20 or 30 that are like really valuable and you want to go after. Mm-hmm. It's not, so in that sense, it's not like, it's not as good as something like Marvel Snap, where it's like the low level, low impact things still have meaningful choices there that can like snowball into higher level things. There's not as much attention to that detail of it, but it's still good. So it's like, I don't know. It's like, I don't want to be too harsh on it with respect to that. And there is still some like strategies that I like in the back of my head that I would like to go back to and try maybe at some point if I were ever playing this game again. I don't know how realistically I would be to go and do that. But there's at least enough there to give you different things to try. So, mm-hmm. I think that's mostly all I have to say about it. If you like JRPGs, this is like going to be a perfect game for you, and so go play it. If you don't like JRPGs like me, it's still a pretty good experience. I think maybe the one small criticism I'll have, but I think this is something inherent to JRPGs is I'll take that back. Something with this game in particular is it feels like you attack every person the same way at a certain point, and that's mm-hmm. Maybe part of the reason why I want to put it down now is, like, is because once
the battles are repetitious.
Yeah. Like once you have your build set up and ready to go, they do try and differentiate the enemies. So it's like some enemies are like, will dodge your attacks really easily if you try and physically attack them, but they're easy to shoot with a free aim like that. So they try and do things like that to try and force you to try out different strategies. Mm-hmm. But yeah, by the end of, once you have everything built up and ready to go, you're basically just doing the same thing over and over again. When you attack things, the only differentiation is like your parry timing when it's the enemy attacking. And that's kind of like how they differentiate it. But yeah,
there are for a lot of the optional bosses that I've encountered so far, mm-hmm. you will notice like the first time you fight them, like, oh, weak to ice. And then if I had enough resources, I would totally like swap up my loadout. The problem is you don't have enough resources to keep every weapon on the bleeding edge.
Yeah.
Unintended. And so you wind up, it's like, oh, well, if my ice weapon was the same level as my main weapon, it would be more effective for this.
Yeah.
But because you're forcing me to choose where I put my resources, meaning they all go to one place. You can't use those strategies.
Yeah. It's not like Pokemon where it's like, it kind of forces you to have to try and exploit like the super effective and like, and avoid the least effective sort of thing. There's definitely some characters where it's like, oh, this attack doesn't do anything to it and it heals it. But basically what that means is like, okay, well, you just don't do anything. The other person's going to kill them instead. And it's like, it's a somewhat negligible, deterrent, you know, like it's not like making you change up your strategy of what you're doing, those sorts of like elemental affinities or weaknesses. So that's kind of like one thing that is maybe personally, like I felt like it was kind of a criticism against it. I don't know, but maybe some people really enjoy the pairing and they don't get as worn out of it. And plus it's also post credits too. So I don't know how harsh I can be on it there too, because it's all kind of like optional after that point. So yeah, I don't know. That's all I have to say. I don't want to, again, like, I don't want people to come after me with pitchforks. Like, I do think if you like JRPGs, this is an excellent game. The art direction is amazing on it, no matter what you think of the game quality. And, it is a very beautiful game to play. And so, yeah. I would say A for me, S tier if you really like that sort of game. So, yeah. And then I got one more, not too far into it, but I started playing Pacific Drive, which funny that Moxie mentioned that earlier. I'm only an hour into it, so I'm still kind of going through towards the end of the tutorial and figuring out like what a run is and kind of what the flow of the game is and like how you repair and take care of your car. Mm-hmm. So not too much to say about it. I don't know. It takes place in the PMW and it has anomalies, so it's kind of cool. Shrug. I don't know.
Biggest advice I'd give you is keep the radio on because the soundtrack is amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I don't have too many questions yet. I'm still just trying to figure out the mechanics of the game. So,
yeah.
I
keep on forgetting that game exists, and I played like the preview build, which is like the first two or so hours, and had a very good time with it. I just need to, like, the next time I need like a survival-ish game, need to just like remember that it exists and fire it up.
Yeah. I've only done one loop of like going out, scavenging, coming back sort of thing.
It's a really satisfying loop.
Yeah. So I'm waiting to see like kind of how that evolves and like how you can do multiple waypoints and stuff when you're doing your navigation planning. But yeah, so super early into it. Don't really have too much to say about it yet, but that's nice. All I got.
Yeah. Dennis, I'm going to go to you because you mentioned something new.
So I've got a couple more mobile games as I've continued my exploration. And then I don't know if I want to be the one to, introduce Monster Train 2 because I've only played one run.
Okay.
But I imagine other people here will be able to pile on with me.
You're about where I'm at. I played like one run. So like, it might actually be best to save it, to save like the introduction until I know more than, the monster deployment phase is really good, as a really good addition to this. And that is pretty much my only opinion so far.
What if everyone got deployed the same way as champions?
Yes. Yeah. Unless Moxie, did you play Monster Train 2?
I didn't know this was a thing. I will be playing Monster Train.
Yeah.
Did you play Monster Train 2 too?
Ben played the demo. I think that I'm going to make an executive decision. Yeah. I don't feel comfortable talking about it until I played more of it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then let's go to Mobile Town. Found some other gems on Apple Arcade. The first one is a little game called Smash Hit. And it is a endless shooter, I guess, kind of.
Okay.
Are kind of lobbing pinballs forward.
This has some of the most satisfying sound and kinesthetics to it.
Yes.
Oh my god. Yes. Like, yeah, I played a previous version of this and I would play it just to hear the pinball hitting the glass.
Oh, it is wonderful. So if you've played Pokemon Snap, you know what you're doing in this game. You're like lobbing pinballs forward. Your camera is on rails progressing forwards through the level, and you can't slow that down or you can't change direction. And so you have to throw these pinballs to break obstacles that are in your way. You also have to hit targets, which give you more pinballs to throw. Mm-hmm. And then hitting an obstacle will cause you to lose 10 pinballs.
Mm.
And you got to keep that counter kind of managed to keep moving forwards.
When you say Pokemon Snap, you mean like Pokemon Go?
No, I mean like Pokemon Snap, where you are on rails and lobbing Pokeballs throughout
okay.
the environment.
Okay. Yeah. I thought you were talking about like, how you throw Pokeballs and that by kind of like swiping up on the screen.
Oh yeah. I don't swipe to throw them. I just tap. I wonder if swiping would give me better control.
I don't know. Yeah. Continue. Huh. Sorry. The dumb question.
Oh, you're good. Yeah. So the big hook of the game though, is that there is a ton of physics going on in how things break and move when you hit them.
Mm-hmm.
And so there will basically be giant hammers hanging from swivels, kind of rotating around. And if you shoot the hammer, it'll kind of dong off the hammer and kind of push it into a different rotation. Or if you shoot the shaft that the hammer is hanging from, and that's glass, it'll break and the hammer will drop. And so as you're charging forward through the level, you kind of have to quickly decide, where do I shoot this thing? Am I even going to have to shoot this obstacle? Because there are lots of obstacles where if you just, watch how they're moving, you'll be like, okay, I'm going to pass while that's on the side. I don't need to waste ammunition on that. That's the game. It, like you said, it's super satisfying, to break things and, to kind of have that, sound design as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's not a lot to it beyond that. But good little time waster. Mm-hmm. Smash hit.
Yeah. Sometimes that's what you need.
This is mm-hmm. like a blast from the past. Cause I feel like I played this like 10 or 15 years ago. Like,
it's an old one. Like, yeah.
OG mobile game. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I should specify this is Smash Hit Plus because they, dress it up for
Apple Arcade.
I have no idea what they added. So, yes.
They probably just removed a bunch of like microtransaction stuff, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. I believe that. There are technically power ups in the game. Like you can shoot targets that allow you to like fire an infinite chain gun of pinballs for a little bit or slow down time. For a little bit, but mostly I just forget those are there. Mm. But you get into a real good flow state. I also think the levels are not set. They're kind of assembled each time you go through them from different pieces. And so, it's always a little bit different every time you play.
Mm-hmm.
The other mobile game that I got on arcade is What the Car.
I saw you playing sequel. This on Apple's weird like social gaming thing. I was like, oh shit, that game exists. I love that.
Yeah. So this is the sequel to What the Golf, with the idea of like you launch a car out of a cannon and there's going to be something zany about it
mm-hmm.
that you have to manage as you go through the level. What the Golf was a lot of fun, very creative. And What the Car, to my estimation, can't quite recapture that magic. Even though they're trying to make the car very different every time you play, it still boils down to you either have a boost button or a jump button.
Mm-hmm.
And the levels that you're going through just don't, they feel very bland for everything going on in them. There's bears holding cardboard signs and cutesy little stuff all over, very Katamari like.
Mm-hmm.
But it just it fails to feel very special, or like level to level there is a ton of unique stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas What the Golf felt like it had a little bit more creative zest.
What the Golf
and how different they were.
Like you would not know like what the level's thing was until mm-hmm. you did like an input. And each time it was like a punchline reveal or something mm-hmm. like that,
yes.
where it's like, oh, it's not like I am, my little guy is using the stick to hit the ball. It's like, I'm actually flinging the guy toward the pin or something like that. Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I kept wanting What the Car to do that. But like I said, it all felt very samey, even though it's like, oh, well, this is a hover car and this car has balloons strapped to it. Mm-hmm. And this car has a giant spring underneath it. Well, all three of those effectively just mean you have a jump button.
Yeah.
And that was it.
And like each of the What the Golf, like there were different zones where like, oh, this mm-hmm. is all like everything works by super hot rules. Like it, mm-hmm. it just, the hits just kind of kept coming. I do remember running out of steam and what the car. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that probably yes. was why.
Out of gas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Ben. Yes.
Well, it depends on which world you were.
I will say that there are moments where certain levels will be a mini game so completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Like one, you just had to make a sandwich.
Okay.
And you're like, your car is at a counter and you're literally just going back and forth to assemble the components of a sandwich. And I'm like, yes, more WarioWare in this,
yeah,
please.
Yeah.
Like those worked for me. One, you're on like a playground, like spring rocker, type of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to get that going hard enough that you could then fling the car off the playground,
mm-hmm.
Over the finish line. Like fun stuff like that still had those kind of sparks.
Yeah.
But that was one out of every 10 levels, mm-hmm. maybe. And you're doing kind of samey stuff in between.
It feels like they're trying to replace like visual variety with like the unexpected mechanical variety. Like I have a distinct recollection of like, okay, I press the accelerator button and my car grows legs and starts running down the road. And that is very mm-hmm. cute. Comma. Yeah.
Yeah. But functionally that is no different than if it had just had wheels.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So yeah, I wanted them to go crazier and more disparate where the game is almost quickly figuring out what the game is.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see like a What the Party or something like that, where yeah. like this kind of style of you don't know what the rules are until you put in that first input could be really fun,
mm-hmm.
In bite-sized pieces.
Yeah.
I don't think What the Car White gets there.
There's a VR sequel too called What the Bat, where you are.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. Yeah. Where, it's like, yeah, you're like a baseball game, but it does a bunch of stuff. I remember that being entertaining, but VR, you know, for me, I'm either in the mood for it and I'm not, and I run hot mm-hmm. and cold, you know, I get real into it for a while, then drop it and forget that it exists. So
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I, you know, those are the mobile games. We'll talk about Monster Train 2 when we've all had a chance to put a little more time into it.
Mm-hmm.
I have continued with Doom the Dark Ages. And what I will say is, there is a very clear difficulty spike when you get into hell, which, you know, diegetically makes sense.
Yeah.
I can appreciate
usually that is a momentous occasion in a Doom game.
Yes. But it feels like you can kind of clearly feel the game shifting from teaching you to testing you.
Okay.
And I think, you know, Doom in a lot of ways had just brilliant level design, game design, et cetera, behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm seeing glimpses of that as I go, where it's each of these combat arenas has something interesting to it that is forcing me to change my approach. Like, you know, what if this arena was so full of grunt fodder enemies that like that was the main problem instead of the big bad guys? Or, you know, what if these two big dividers in the middle you had to constantly be managing around? Or, mm-hmm. you know, just all these different level design tests are very satisfying to think about a little bit and then find an approach that works for. And I've been impressed that I've consistently used all of the weapon wheel as I've been going through them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Doom still got it.
Cool.
And I'll continue on playing that.
Any cool that is, hooks with the shield? Has that changed at all? Or is that kind of continued to be just a backbone of the...
No, there have been blades. There have been darts. But there have not been any hooks on the shield.
Mm-hmm.
No, so at a certain point you get runes. Oh, geez,
come on. All right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, nice for that one.
Yeah, yeah. At a certain point you get runes for the shield, which is like pick one extra power. The first one is like when you parry, you create like a little fault line that goes out forward from you. The other ones that I've unlocked so far are you fire a bunch of seeking darts out of your shield. And then the one I just unlocked and haven't messed with yet is you like power a automated turret on your shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all very interesting concepts, but I've found the fault line, just because stunning enemies is so important and the fault line does a bunch of stun. I've focused on upgrading that instead of trying out the new stuff. So they led with their best foot for the runes, maybe a little too much there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so that's the big new thing is now, now the shield has, different loadouts, or kind of bonus powers that you can add to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So that is the Dark Ages. I am now on another, flying a dragon level. Mm-hmm. So it feels like they've kind of got a cadence of, you know, couple regular levels, giant mech level,
that's
couple
smart.
Regular levels, flying a dragon level, and then repeat.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. It is good boomer shooter territory.
Cool.
And that's me.
Moxie, how about you?
Honestly, I don't have a whole lot.
Okay.
I'm kind of in a grinding phase on Fallen London and what's his name? The Borderlands CEO is doing an amazing job at killing off my desire to play Borderlands.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that is
sorry.
Fine. Yeah. I also am going to be kind of disappointing. A lot of my game playing time has been spent with Rocksmith, which is fun, but also, you know, it's not anything I can talk about on a show. I'm getting back up to where I was when I stopped playing though. So that's good. You
just need to come on and be like, oh, I learned this new song. I'll play it for you.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to do not here. Not that like that would literally just be me playing on an audio. That would just be me playing on with, with a song. Like if it was a stream and people could see, like I could demonstrate like the notation and stuff, that would be cool. Mm-hmm. I think, cause I am an advocate for it as like a good way to learn songs, if not learn how to play an instrument. The two games that I streamed this past weekend, on Friday, I streamed a short horror game called Subject. This is a walking sim with slight puzzle elements, has kind of a setting where you are in this, test chamber, kind of doing Flashlight House stuff. You are, looking for interactables, picking up an item and going to see where you can use them. The idea being that they're trying to like test you for psychic phenomena and horrible things are happening. There are like jump scares and stuff that seems to be following you. And the situation kind of deteriorates from there. It's impressive as a solo kind of deal, but I didn't find it to be especially scary or find the puzzles to be that challenging. So that was a bit of a dud. That is just called subject in brackets.
I do have to say that the gag where you like open the desk drawer and just a hand comes out of the desk drawer and pulls it back closed,
that was very cute.
Yeah, unintentionally kind of adorable.
Oh yeah, it was incredibly cute. It didn't really fit in a horror game like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but like it's a solo effort and it's like less than an hour. Probably a little bit too much money for that, and I almost never say that. But you know, they made a product. They, you know, etc. They advertise how much time it takes. The other
just say wait for it to go on sale.
Like, yeah, that's what I'll pull a bet on that. Wish list it, doesn't cost you anything. Moxie, you were gonna say something.
I had to leave early. Are you ever actually in danger? Because like the couple of jump scares I saw, if you didn't run, the monster just kind of stood there looking at you.
I don't believe you were ever in danger. No. Yeah, like even when you're in a room that is like filling with blood, it like there's no real time limit to it. Eventually the blood just kind of stops rising. So I don't know that I'm asking for it to have like instant fail conditions or whatever, or be more like frustrating. But like to give you an idea, like everything you can interact with has a little like eye icon painted next to it. So like it really is just kind of like pulling you along with it.
Which is fine. I mean, there's not really anything wrong with it.
Yeah. It just, it's more interested in being like a linear series of fun images that they came up with more than you know, a game about solving puzzles in a space. More interesting is a game called Parasocial.
Ooh.
Yeah. This is by a small Japanese studio. I think it's two brothers called Chilla's Art. I have done games by them. They're really interesting. They've made a ton of them. But like every few months they put out like a roughly 2 hours, like horror walking sim kind of, you know, kind of thing, you know, kick ass, sorry, that motorcycle came through loud and clear. It was great. So they put out kind of a mechanics light, first person horror game often set in Japan. Like a previous one that I did was like, it was called like Stigmatized Property. And it was like, rented a cheap apartment only to find out that somebody died there and it's haunted. There was another one like called Convenience Store where you're like working late at a convenience store at night. This one, I'll just spoil it. There's nothing explicitly like supernatural about it. You are playing a VTuber who is being stalked. And you're, you know, trying with your friend to figure out what's going on, but it takes place over the course of several days and like weird stuff keeps happening. There's a guy who just kind of keeps showing up. Hey, Greta.
Wait, is it Greta?
No, sorry. Greta just like jumped on me and then jumped away. And like, it's 2 hours. So like to say too much about what happens and it would kind of, you know, spoil it. And I think that cool things do happen, even though that remit, you know, kind of does make it clear like, oh, there's a guy who's coming after you. But the way that it kind of ends up being really interesting. There's a lot in this that kind of feels a little bit like Perfect Blue a little bit. The Satoshi Kon movie, from like back in the 90s, the anime about the pop star. I thought it was real cool. And it has interesting ideas in it. And I don't know, it's neat to play something that is just kind of a thriller almost, more so than like an explicit horror thing.
Yeah. It looks cool.
Yeah. It's neat. I don't know. I like that studio because if there's ever a time where I just need a 2 hour game to cover a night, I can just grab something. I only did this one, not because it's the most recent, but because it was just the most highly rated of them from recently. I haven't done one of theirs in a while. So.
Yeah. I see one of their other ones is Shinkansen Zero. Is that like a, like, it's like, is that like the platform one, but in a train?
Yeah. It is very, yeah, it's really similar, to my understanding. It's really similar to, Exit Zero or Platform Zero.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's them saying, oh, we could probably do that too. And then,
yeah.
And then making their own version of it. I'm curious about that. Their aesthetic is different than the kind of like hyper sterile, Platform Zero kind of thing. So I don't know. I'll probably do that one sooner rather than later because I'm curious about it. It was either, Parasocial or that one. Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
Yep. And that's what I got. Any questions about either of them?
No.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Go back and watch.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, and this was proposed by Aaron. Thank you so much, Aaron. You know, it's unfortunately kind of a bad habit in all of media, but especially in video games, to kind of pander or talk down to the audience. and just really be didactic in a way that detracts from the story being told. But we want some good examples. What are some good AAA games, or we'll just say games in general, that do a good job of not pandering to you?
Yeah. I'll take us in with Callum, who says, Cyberpunk 2077. It lets Night City exist as it is and doesn't overexplain the history. The character is very much told through showing it. Yeah. Well, agreed. Like the codex in that is good. It's written from, Johnny Silverhand's, point of view. So like, I always love that.
That's cool.
I always love that whenever like an in-game resource is written from a perspective and not just omniscient, which is nice. And the fact that nobody says like, oh, he's my choom, you know, choom, what we say instead of friend, like it just lets you sit with the slang and figure it out through context, even when it's really goofy.
I've only done the Edgerunners anime, but I am impressed by like the first exposure to that stuff. It's like, oh, this dorky fake slang. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of it, you're like, oh yeah, no, that sounds completely natural.
Yeah. Yeah. It just commits to it. And there's no such thing as non-embarrassing cyberpunk. So, I mean, I like the genre, but it's just true. Let's see here. Moxie, what does Hurricane Belushi say?
That's such a great name.
It's a really good username.
Hurricane Belushi says, Animal Well, I can't think of any other game that has so many cool little gameplay mechanics, bubble jumping, frisbee surfing, kitty rescuing, but allows you the joy of figuring it all out by yourself. That's not even considering all the secret optional items.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have anything to say about that, Ben, being the resident Animal Well person?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it does a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. It's not a AAA game.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be hard on them. I'm just saying this is what I kept coming up with, where it's like, oh, this is a game that doesn't talk down to you. Oh, it's an indie game. Like,
yeah. I think you just kind of have to take it, you know, just take it as it comes. Moxie, what does Michael say?
Michael says, the original Monster Hunter. Some blame certainly lies with my kid brain, but I put hours into that game without grasping the core loop of kill monsters for parts, make better weapon, kill more monsters.
I wonder.
I played it like an RPG and fought each boss once and tried to move on.
Huh. I wonder if Michael is talking about like the original Monster Hunter, like the weird like PS2 online one, like way back in the day.
Huh.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Michael.
I don't know of any other original Monster Hunter.
But yeah, I think Michael is the person who last week I was like, I had a follow up question, and then they like answered it just after we finished recording. Yeah. but yeah, Monster Hunter is really, I mean, in my experience, not interested in telling you what to do. So I get it.
No, in general.
Yeah. Dennis. What is your answer for this? Rather than circling back around to myself, because we didn't get very many, I'll let you give yours.
Well, I think we all realize like, oh man, it's hard to think of a AAA game that doesn't patronize you.
Yeah.
And so I could be misremembering here. So I'm going off of like how it rests in my mind. So someone could write once this comes out and be like, no, there were totally a ton of tutorials in it, but the original Uncharted, to my memory, did a very good job of just using like in-game context clues to how you should be fighting. And rather than having like, oh, pause and pop up, and if you hit an enemy near a ledge, you might push them over that ledge, and yada yada yada. It's like, oh no, let's present you with someone that you're going to hit next to a ledge, and you'll see how they bounce off of it, and then you've got that in your repertoire. So from a gameplay standpoint, they again, to my memory, they did a good job of kind of introducing you to all the different mechanics of that combat, kind of as you went along, by putting you in situations where it was bound to happen, versus like stopping you and telling you explicitly, hey, do this so that happens.
For all their faults as a studio, like to my memory, they have always been good at that. mm-hmm. you know, like from the stuff that I played. So I'm going back to like, Uncharted 2 and then up through, you know, Last of Us, which takes me to my answer. So I saw pandering, you know, like, oh, does it pander to you or does it not? So I've got Last of Us on the brain. My new story mm-hmm. relates to it as well. But when I think of pandering, think of like, oh, is it, you know, just being like, oh, fans, you're gonna love this, and making it so you not only do not play as Joel in Last of Us 2, but like you don't spend the entire game as Ellie, a character you know about. I think that is a really good decision, especially with how good of a character Abby is. Yeah, so like them just not giving you explicitly what you want, which is things you are familiar with, but instead very consciously telling a new story that is impacted by what Ellie does, I think that is good and smart. Mm-hmm. Sorry if I broke the prompt. I just that's what came to mind.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I haven't watched a single episode of the first or second season, but it feels like, you know, Naughty Dog did a lot of interesting stuff in The Last of Us 2, the video game mm-hmm. that also like would piss off alt-right shitheads.
Yeah.
And then in the TV series, it, still did a whole bunch of stuff to piss off alt-right shitheads, but forgot the stuff that made it interesting.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. And again, that's not firsthand experience, but
yeah.
Naughty Dog did do a good job of like switching it up, not just to switch it up, mm-hmm. But to like have some real pathos behind it as well.
Like they had, you know, it wasn't just for the sake of doing a stunt kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see, Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I had an answer, but it left my head because now I was thinking about The Last of Us Part 2. My non-answer, like, indie game ones were, like, The Witness and more recently The Blueprints, I thought did a good job of, you know, it allow you to figure things out.
Letting you fucking twist. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I'll circle back to me and maybe I'll remember my AAA one. Oh, never mind. I got it. BioShock Infinite.
Yeah.
BioShock Infinite, I thought did a good job of like telling you things, or like if you pay attention to what's going on in the scenery and the narrative, you get all the subtext of what's going on. Hmm. It's, I mean, most of it's on the surface as well, but you know, yeah, I appreciated that.
Yeah. Cool. Maxi, round us out.
Man, I feel like I'm the wrong person to ask for this because, especially from gameplay, generally of the opinion of like not explicitly telling the person is bad game design.
Okay.
So like, not that I think that's just my preference, but yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know though. In terms of though, like fun ways to do tutorials and stuff. The thing that comes to mind is, Shadow of Mordor's, thing where it starts out with you training your son how to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you're not learning how to fight, you're not learning the mechanics, you're teaching someone else the mechanics.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
That is also the game that introduced stealth kills by having you sneak up and kiss your wife.
Yes, that also. I forgot about that. Yes. In terms of more general, like, not pandering, I love Paradox for just to piss off fan, like, racist fans of Crusader Kings, making it so that your kingdom will innately assimilate other nearby cultures, and every character in the game is neither straight or gay. They're, you know, on a spectrum.
Mm-hmm. I feel like Paradox is constantly in a fight with the worst Hearts of Iron players.
Yep.
Oh man.
Oh, I do want to call out the worst instance of this just because I find it funny. The original Borderlands in the tutorial has like, hey, crouch in order to get under an obstacle. and then there are literally no obstacles to crouch under the rest of the game.
It doesn't even have you like go under a broken door like always happens.
Nope. There is absolutely no need to crouch for the entire rest of the game.
Fun.
Throwing over to Expedition 33, the characters, there is a tutorial on how to crouch to walk under stuff, which literally it's just text that says, like, if you walk into a low area, your character will crouch. Like, there's not even an input for you to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes up so infrequently throughout the rest of the game that it's like, oh, shit, crouching moment. Whoa, okay. Yeah. That was a thing. Like, I don't know if they're disguising loading screens and it's places where they couldn't think of any other way to do it or what.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is very funny that they had a tutorial for a complete non-mechanic because there's literally no input to have you crouch.
But they don't want you to be like, you come up on, again, like a broken door you have to get under. It's like, oh, where's the button? I can't crouch. Oh, I can't get through it. And you never just walk toward it.
Yeah. Well, it's like in Gears of War, you eventually stop trying to go anywhere that has a waist high wall.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So anything that's not a complete open walkway, yes, would get ignored if you didn't know about the crouch.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a segment, I think. Thank you, Dennis, for posting this. And thank you, folks, for responding. If you would like to participate in this, follow us on Blue Sky at thelevelpodcast.bsky.social and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Ben, break my heart.
I will maybe hearten your heart. There was news this past week that Alex Garland is going to be writing an Elden Ring movie. I need to reread the headline to make sure that that is a correct fact.
Yeah. This was... Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, A24 is making it, and so I could see why they would want to pair up with him. I think he's kind of their golden child since Civil War was like one of their most financially successful movies, and that's one that he directed. I think I talked a couple months ago about Warfare, the movie he co-directed this year that I really enjoyed. Yeah, Garland's been around for a while. He has plenty of movies that he's made. I think everybody probably has their own favorite Alex Garland movie, whether it's like Annihilation or Men or Ex Machina or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, odd pairing, I guess. But he is an outspoken video game player, also an outspoken anime watcher. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this will stick a landing or not, but
A lot stacked against it. That is not even necessarily me being concerned about him. Like the only movie of his that I have seen looking at this, well, I guess I saw 28 Days Later, was Annihilation. And I like Annihilation just fine. Mm-hmm. Very little else he's done has looked interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's not impugning your taste if you enjoy his work, Ben. It's just, you know, kind of the thing. I just think that doing it as a movie is a really, really bad idea. Like, we know nothing about what the story is going to be, but like, unless it is like super zoomed in on an event that takes place well before the game actually happens, I cannot see this being anything good.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, the thing that's so surprising about it is like, it's not like a TV show or it's not like X, Y, or Z, because it's like the game is so massive and like, you know, it takes dozens and dozens of hours to even complete. But like, yeah, it's like, what are you going to do in an hour and a half? Like,
right.
Is the entire movie just one boss battle or, you know, like,
yeah. Soul
frame for frame.
Yeah.
Souls adaptations are bad. Like, go read the Dark Souls comics. They're really terrible. There's only like one and a half like trade paperbacks of the Bloodborne comic that are any good.
Yeah.
You know, like the only idea that I could see working for this is oh my gosh. Like if like the Black Knife plot or something very, very specific in the, like in the history.
I will say,
I think
good.
I think my pitch would just be like, situation comedy set in the wherever the Knights of the Round Table area is.
Right.
Just no combat, the entire thing, just like D and what's his name, Angry Dude, just hating each other.
Yeah.
I will say, to try and hearten this, is like usually his movies are pretty idea heavy though, or like there's usually some sort of framework or some sort of like core idea that the rest of the movie is fleshed out from.
Mm-hmm.
So I do anticipate there being some level of like thought in that direction at least. Yeah, and he's writing and directing it. So it's like, I don't know. I'm excited for him just to make movies. So the fact that it happens to also be a video game movie, like, sure, I'll take it. I mean, hey, come on. He directed Dread. Like, that was pretty solid. Yeah. The news story came out that he ghost directed that movie, apparently.
And didn't want his name on it?
No, it was like something, there was another director there, and like details are sparsely coming out that like they basically asked him to go back and like reshoot and redirect some of the things because he had written it and not directed it.
Mm-hmm.
But he is kind of ramping up as a director at that point.
Yeah.
Before Ex Machina was his first like officially titled directed film. But
To echo, okay, it's less about Alex Garland and more that Elden Ring feels like a piece of media that would very much resist being translated into a movie.
Right.
You know, like if you tried to make Watchmen a movie.
I need
Yeah.
Okay, like, if you tried to make like a game, the game Battleship, a movie. Oh, fuck. Okay. What if you tried to like make a movie out of the emojis on your phone? Fuck.
Like honestly,
nothing is not a movie.
You know, I think that it is just my, like, it is really just like, I don't know, my predilections, but like the only adaptation that I want to see of Elden Ring is like a tabletop, like setting book.
Mm.
Like a source.
What if it got turned into though like a multiplayer battle royale game?
We're gonna find out this weekend, I guess. So, I don't know. I don't mean to be a bummer on this. I just I do not feel very optimistic about it. Like this was rumored, and then it kind of went away, and I thought, okay, that was probably just a false start, or somebody was starting some shit, and then it. And then it was confirmed, and it's like, well, damn. And now I'm realizing he didn't direct 28 Days Later. He wrote it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. He also wrote Sunshine, though. Sunshine's a good movie.
Yeah.
If Mad Max Fury Road can be an entire movie that's just one single long chase sequence, maybe this could be a movie that's just one boss fight.
Just make it about the festival to kill Radon or something like that. Like it needs to be specific, but like to be pandery, it needs to have a bunch of shit from the game. Otherwise it's not going to reflect I need to come in here and see like all my favorite beats.
Yeah.
And it needs the main character to like constantly die to trivial enemies.
Yeah.
I will say with his second...
Go meta, just make it be the story of Let Me Solo Her guy.
I will say with his second most recent movie, Civil War, like he did a good job in that movie of very like sparsely giving you details about like what's going on. And it was,
like the Antifa massacre.
but it was specific about like not like over explaining things, but if you were interested in the details, you could kind of lean in and see stuff. Mm-hmm. So I could definitely see him like making a script that like works in this universe and is like a good compendium to the game, but does not like try and take the place of the game and like try and, you know, retell the story or something like that. But
like if he brings like hit the visual chops from Annihilation, I could see that working. But,
Yeah, that'll definitely be interesting to watch, is to see what art direction he chooses to go with for that. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's we'll see.
I'll go on to this one. Again, Last of Us on the mind. But Neil Druckmann appeared on a podcast and did something really dumb. We're going to spoil the end of The Last of Us 1, but it's a 12-year-old game. At the end of The Last of Us 1, you know, you've been taking this young girl, Ellie, across the country to like a rebel facility where, they're going to study her immunity to the fungus outbreak. And when Joel gets her there, he's grown attached to her and finds out that the surgery to get what they need to make a vaccine, or even just to study it, will kill Ellie. And he cannot let this happen. So he slaughters everybody in the hospital and then takes her away and then lies to her about what happened there. And this served as a, you know, you can disagree about like the quality of that as an ending, but it did, I think, create discussion and allowed for a ton of ambiguity about, was it worth risking Ellie's life for something that may or may not have helped? So you get just kind of a classic, you know, in literature, you know, the needs of one person to hold on to this person who's dear to them for the chance to save, you know, a bunch of humanity. And notwithstanding anything that is revealed about what happens, you know, about that event in The Last of Us 2, you know, like whether or not that does or doesn't work, you need to keep it ambiguous for the ending to function. Neil Druckmann went on an IGN podcast and said, oh yeah, no, it totally would have worked. If he just like let her die, then they would have made a vaccine and a bunch of people wouldn't have had to die.
Cool. Thanks, dude.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks. That is a really, really dumb thing to do for like the one lasting good legacy of that work, which is an ending that was like internally controversial, you know, like very among gray. Among yeah. people who liked it. Yeah. Yeah. What a
say holding the meme of holding the dog's mouth shut under the table with, uh-huh. With Moxie.
mm-hmm. What's
I'll post it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I need to look at the quote. Our intent was, yes, they could make a cure. Now, is our science a little shaky on that now that people are questioning it? Sure. Our science is a little shaky. People that now that people are questioning it, I can't say anything. I can say our intent was that would have made a cure. That makes the most interesting philosophical question for what Joel does. You fool, you buffoon. And that's frustrating, not just because he comes out and
wait, did he just go anti-vax too?
I don't know. I don't know what he was saying. His politics are weird. But like, I forget what I was going to say. I'm sorry. I lost it. But no, okay. No, what's frustrating is like, he knows enough to make a story that has like a really wide appeal, right? But like, he knows enough to make it by accident and not understand why it worked.
It's like one of those things where it's like sometimes directors can give too much information about their work, and I don't know.
Yeah,
but I don't know. It's a double-edged sword because it's like sometimes they'll illuminate things that people did not see, you know. And mm-hmm. it's like
I think that it's up to the director to decide, you know, like use their discretion at it. And I think that this is a failure of discretion, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, sometimes you know, somebody needs to come out and say like, oh no, this is wrong. People are taking the wrong message from this. The director of I Saw the TV Glow, Jane Schoenbrunn, tried to keep things ambiguous, but somebody like came up to her and said, oh, this movie seems like an endorsement of suicide. And they were like, no, that is absolutely not what this is. Mm-hmm. And like explicitly said, this is like, nobody take that away from this. Like,
yeah,
they didn't want to say, you know, guide people into what to think about it, but also said like, no, that's actually wrong. There's a time for a director to come out and get in front of that. That was mm-hmm. it.
Yeah. I mean, the most charitable read is that Druckmann fully believes that like, you know, the audience is allowed to have their own opinions on what happened the same way he is. And he's like, it's a level playing field. And we all speculate. Yeah. Here's what my narrative is. But nothing about Neil Druckmann tells me that is the level of emotional intelligence he's bringing to this.
Right. So, yeah, that was honestly like it seemed like a huge own goal, you know, and I will continue to believe, just pretend he didn't say that, because I think the work as it exists, like this is a perfect case for death of the author, you know, like, fuck you. You don't get to decide what that is. Yeah. Blah. Anybody have any other thoughts about this? Am I overreacting to it?
No, I think it just because we have access to all the information all the time, like people feel the need to fill any gap. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, the gaps are good. The ambiguity has value. Mm-hmm. It's a very specific Western way of thinking that feels like making things clearer is always better.
Yeah, yeah.
I can see how like they might be in a position where they have to start putting down more concrete choices in certain places if they're elaborating it for the TV show. But I don't have, mm-hmm. I haven't seen any of the new season, so I'm not sure if there's any context or not.
I've got no idea.
Part of this is also like, should this have ever been a TV show?
I mean,
Independent of all that, though, it's probably better if you can recognize when something is like a good, like gray, like moral question, and maybe not like reduce that. But you know, I don't know. Maybe maybe there's something else going on.
Yeah,
but okay, yeah, I agree with Death of the Author, though.
I see the meme here, us talking about The Last of Us's ending being good and trying to stop Moxie from saying like, no, actually it's dog shit or whatever. Yeah. Oh. Let's see here. More stories. Dennis, what are some details about the Switch 2?
Yeah, just a nice little tidbit as we are very close to this actually launching.
It's next week. Fuck.
Yeah, so even closer at the time you're listening to this, a developer demoing a game called Nobunaga's Ambition Awakening Complete Edition, mm-hmm. which is a mouthful.
Yeah. It's a classic feudal Japan strategy game series, like goes back to like microcomputers in the 80s.
Ah, yeah. Very cool. Well, it's going to be on the Nintendo Switch 2. And they just casually plugged in a USB mouse mm-hmm. and started playing with that on the stream, confirming that you will be able to do that. And in fact, you not only will you be able to plug in a USB mouse instead of only using the Joy-Con as a mouse, mm-hmm. But you will be able to interchangeably go back and forth between the two of them very organically. Mm-hmm. So I imagine this would be like if you had two USB mouses on your PC, and just whichever one you move, it knows that's the one to pay attention to. Mm-hmm.
I think there's some that take a USB keyboard as well.
Well, there's speculation that they did not show a USB keyboard being used, but it would be very weird if they let you use a USB mouse but not a USB keyboard. Mm-hmm. So it looks like the Kotaku, where this article comes from, sent the question, has not gotten an answer on keyboards, but this is a surprisingly good move from Nintendo. Mm-hmm. Instead of being super walled garden about how you can play with a Switch 2, mm-hmm. And only being able to use the Mousetendo or you know whatever they want to call it,
mm-hmm. Mouse Con,
or having the sanctioned Mario themed keyboard, apparently you can just plug stuff in and go, which is good and how we should be doing things. So yeah. Nintendo might have two good consoles in a row.
Yeah, maybe.
Is it possible?
We'll see. Yeah,
we shall see.
Yeah, that's a pleasant surprise. I mean, I guess it's on the developer, but there's no reason not to. Like, I don't know, mm-hmm. especially
now in before Nintendo sees this and responds by shutting down third party mouse and keyboard compatibility.
Well, yeah, they do dumb shit like that all the time. But like, especially with like the Switch being like a de facto way for people to play a lot of indie games, like there are games like, I don't know, Hypnospace Outlaw or the Golden Idol games where like mm-hmm. there are fine Switch ports that use the joystick or whatever, but like if somebody wants to play it in a situation where they can use a mouse, that would be the way to do it, right? So just makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see if Nintendo fucks it up or if that was like a dev kit thing that is not actually turned on or whatever, but now that people know, they'll put pressure and maybe Nintendo will listen. They never
let this
do
be
that.
A thing. But this would be so good.
Yeah. Moxie, continuing the Star Wars Fortnite stuff. What's going on with that?
Yeah. So I'm trying to stick to my New Year's resolution is to mostly have positive stories, which isn't easy in today's world.
No.
Yeah.
One I dug up is Fortnite's been having some crazy skins. One, just to troll the universe, they released a Sith Lord Jar Jar skin.
Okay.
Going off of that whole meme.
Okay.
And then perhaps even better, they have released a skin for Emperor Palpatine called Galactic Glow Style that gives him his cloak, a star pattern, and neon yellow highlights.
Okay.
The Polygon article describes it as being Emperor Palpatine's disco era.
Okay.
Please call him Sheev.
Is that Palpatine's name?
I wish I was joking, but I am not.
No, that's it. I mean,
to be fair, to the whole not like even...
leave gaps, leave ambiguity. Emperor Palpatine did not need a first name.
No, not at all. Yeah, no, but every name in Star Wars is dumb. You know, hence like what is it, the meme name Glup Shitto or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, I think we've talked about this before, but still one of the funniest exchanges I've ever had with Dennis is I was describing in what is it, Clone Wars or whatever, there's a character Savage Opress. Yes. And Dennis asks if he's Irish.
He's from Space Ireland. Oh, God.
Huh. Give it to up, Anakin. I have the high ground.
Well, I mean, that is funny because Ewan McGregor is Irish.
True.
Huh. So just the idea is that like when Palpatine dances, he gets a special design. Is that the idea?
I don't think he... No, it's not even that. It's just all the time.
Okay. Good for him.
As I understand it, there's some mechanic where if you complete the battle pass, then you unlock like super versions of some of the skins. They're just even more over-the-top versions.
Okay.
And I think both of these are that.
Okay. Yeah, well.
Was it maybe crew pass?
That's none of my business.
I mean, yeah. Fortnite, I appreciate Fortnite. I don't understand Fortnite.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's... I take the Lovecraftian cultist approach. You know, I can recognize its value, but knowing too much would destroy me.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's everything. Do we want to button it up?
Let us button.
The credit.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 545. We appreciate you taking the time. You know what to do. Leave ratings or reviews. Tell your friends. Spread the word however you can. It is the way that the show grows. You could also support us on Patreon. That supports the shows and the network and gets you cool stuff like that. Episode of Unfilmable about I Saw the TV Glow that Gwen and I did that I mentioned earlier. That should be coming out around the time this episode comes out. Should be a good time. That is in addition to the episode about Cube that Gary and I did.
Shout out to Cube.
It's not very good.
Yeah.
It's remembered it being better.
That's like the old, pseudo horror sci-fi movie.
Yeah. The extremely Canadian. The Death Trap, movie that's kind of all like shot in just one set.
It's pretty much a student film as well. Too. Kinda, so it's hard, yeah. Hard to be hard, too hard on it.
Didn't stop us.
I mean, one thing you can say is it was better than its sequels.
True. Yeah. I'm morbidly curious about the sequels, but you can do all of that. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
Don't think so.
Okay. Dennis, you got anything?
No, not this week.
Okay. I've been K Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at K.Zone.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I've been Moxie. Someday you'll find me somewhere.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, I didn't write any down.
Ooh.
Yeah, take it. You didn't either, no,
totally
Ben.
Fine.
Yeah, I took this week off.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
I got you, Baze.
Okay, what you got?
Don't you worry. so the first one is non-embarrassing cyberpunk.
Okay.
The joke being that when you listen, is there's no such thing. And then I wrote down towards the end, Savage Opress, only styled as an Irish last name.
Okay.
That's kind of great.
Okay. Let's see, Moxie, do you have anything?
I had one. I had, it's super satisfying to break things.
Ooh, I like that.
I support this.
How do we feel about it's super satisfying to break things?
Rings true.
Okay.
Agreed.
It is decided.